From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. Salmon opens in a week. We'll have predictions, forecasts, and prices. Bristol Bay's sacro herring season is all but over. A new report shows community development quotas in Western Alaska are unfairly low. And no more loosey-goosey with vessel registrations. All that and more coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska fishermen and their families. MC@AMSEA.org.
The official start of Alaska's salmon season is May 17th, with a 12-hour opener at the Copper River in Cordova. The catch there is projected at 19,000 king salmon and just under a million sockeye or red salmon. For a look at upcoming salmon seasons around the state, we go to Lainey Welch with Alaska's Fish Radio in Kodiak.
Statewide, Alaska's 2018 salmon harvest is projected at 149 million fish, down 34% from last year's take. The shortfall stems from lower projections for pink salmon. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is forecasting a total humpy harvest of just over 70 million fish, down by half from last year. For sockeyes, a statewide catch of about 52 million is down by 1.8 million from 2017, which was the fifth largest red salmon catch since 1970. For chum salmon, this year's catch is pegged at 21 million, down by nearly 4 million from last year's huge haul of 25 million chums, the largest catch in 47 years. The 2018 coho catch is pegged at 5.8 million, nearly 600,000 more silvers than last season. For Chinook salmon, a catch of 99,000 is projected in areas outside of southeast Alaska, where the numbers are determined by treaty with Canada. For commercial trawlers, the take is just under 96,000 kings, taken from a few select areas. The market outlook is good heading into the season. Demand for Alaska salmon is fairly strong, and competing farmed salmon prices are high, says Andy Wink of Wink Research and Consulting. And despite catching over a billion pounds of salmon last year, there are no big inventory concerns.
That was Lainey Welch.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
One fishery starts and another closes down. Bristol Bay's sacro herring fishery is all but over for the year. It took less than 2 weeks for seiners to harvest their quotas in Togiak and Port Moeller. KDLG's Avery Lill has more from Dillingham.
The Togiak herring fishery closed to the purseine fleet on May 2nd. The quota for seiners was 16,800 tons, and they managed to take 16,500 tons. Warner Liu is the fleet manager for Icicle Seafoods. Liu also owns Deckhand Seafoods, which smokes, cans, and sells Togiak herring.
Well, the 2018 Togiak season was unusual in that it started way early, but it ran a full 11 days for the seine fishing. That was due mostly to the poor weather that never relented. It was windy, sloppy. Spotter pilots had a rough time flying. A lot of fish were caught with the sounders, not by the usual aerial spotting. It was tough fishing conditions.
The average row recovery was reported at 11.4%. The overall size of the fish caught this year was 366 grams. Liu noted that these fish were smaller than normal.
The long-term average for a seine caught herring is 370 grams, and gill nets 400 or better. This year, the average was way smaller because of the high numbers of 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds. So the market seemed to be more forgiving this year, probably due to the shortfall in Sitka, and the row percent was just fine.
In April, the Sitka sacro herring fishery closed 8,000 tons short of its quota. It's too early to know what price the herring will fetch at market or the base price fishermen will be paid, but Liu is optimistic that the low harvest in Sitka could increase the demand for Togiak herring. Another unusual factor in this year's Togiak herring fishery was colder than average water temperatures, which may have contributed to the herring staying in deeper waters further from shore. Alaska Department of Fish and Game Area Management biologist Tim Sands said that water temperatures usually rise above 3 degrees Celsius during the fishery.
That's when the spawning starts happening and the season really gets going. This year, they never got to 3 degrees, and the spawning didn't really happen like we normally see it, and I think that is part of the reason.
Despite the tough fishing conditions, Sands said the biomass was healthy. The Port Moeller Sacro herring fishery opened briefly on Friday and Saturday. The 39-hour fishery harvested 1,000 tons of herring. Bob Murphy is an Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist on the Alaska Peninsula.
This is what we were shooting for based on the biomass that we observed. The fleet, they were happy with the quality and didn't want to stick through the storm that was occurring. Folks thought it would be best just to get home.
With about 17,500 tons of herring between Togiak and Port Moeller, seining for herring in Bristol Bay is over for 2018. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans, on the web at alaskaseafood.org.
More than two decades ago, a community development quota program, or CDQ, was set up to bring fisheries-based income to cash-strapped Western Alaska communities. By allocating fish from the vast Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands fisheries, local commercial fisheries could then be developed, which would bring a much-needed economic base to the remote communities. But a new report shows that the federal fishery allocation for the CDQ is unfairly low. The Coastal Villages Resource Fund continues to fight for a bigger fishery allocation, and the Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation weighs in as well. KNOM's Gabe Colombo has this report from Nome.
CVRF is one of six nonprofit groups that manage the Community Development Quota, or CDQ, program. CVRF has long been advocating for more fish. Here's outreach manager Michelle Humphrey.
The allocations are not distributed currently based on any formula that focuses on economic need or population, and so the benefits delivered by the program are not being distributed fairly or equitably.
According to the report, the most impoverished communities are served by CVRF and the Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation, or NSEDC. These two represent nearly 70% of the total CDQ-eligible population, but they receive only about 40% of the total CDQ quota. Sarah Marinin is an economist with the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which oversees the CDQ program. She says when the program started in the 90s, each CDQ group submitted a business plan to the state, which then determined the allocations based on a variety of factors.
Demographic information about their communities, proposals for certain partnerships, harvesting vessels, essentially how they plan to use the allocation, how they'd set up their board of directors, if they're going to need additional state funds.
Marinin says political influence also probably played a role.
In terms of each group working to get the most that they can out of the allocations, anytime there's an allocation process within fisheries, there's going to be people who are lobbying hard for their group.
Any new changes would have to be made by amending a federal law called the Magnuson-Stevens Act. It requires a review of the quotas every 10 years, which started in 2012. No allocation changes have been made since 2006. Alaska's congressional delegation has said it wants consensus from all of the CDQ groups before pursuing changes. CVRF has been most vocal in its advocacy. NSEDC says it's not as worried about the allocations right now. Simon Kinneen is the corporation's vice president and quota acquisitions manager. Reading from a prepared statement, he says the amendments to the Magnuson-Stevens Act in 2006 did more than just lock in the quotas.
It also fostered coordination among the groups, provided stability for planning purposes, significantly reduced burdensome oversight, and allowed the groups to be more effective in our various member communities.
He says although larger allocations would be, quote, wonderful, NSEDC has still been able to do a lot of good with what it has. Reporting in Nome, I'm Gabe Colombo.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
fishing vessel and boat owners will likely be required to follow new registration and title requirements next year as part of an effort to create a better paper trail when dealing with derelict vessels. The change is part of Senate Bill 92, which was passed by the Alaska Legislature last week. As KBBI Aaron Bolton reports from Homer, the measure is aimed to give the state, municipalities, and individuals more tools to hold owners of derelict and abandoned vessels legally liable.
The Senate sent the bill to Governor Bill Walker's desk Thursday after the House passed the legislation earlier this week. The bill makes three significant changes. It would make it easier to track vessel ownership via state boat registration requirements and a new titling program. It also lowers the legal bar to hold derelict vessel owners liable and would create a derelict vessel prevention program. Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators Executive Secretary Rachel Lord worked with the statewide task force to craft the bill. She says the new registration and title requirements would create a better paper trail for vessel ownership.
It ends up people saying, oh, no, that's not my boat. That's that guy's boat. I sold it to him yesterday for, you know, $15 on a bar napkin. And it sounds kind of silly and trite, but it happens all the time all over the state.
Currently, federally documented vessels are not required to register with the state, but that would change under the new law. Non-federally documented boats over 24 feet would also be required to have a title of ownership. Homer Harbormaster Brian Hawkins also worked on the state task force. He says the bill would specifically help ports and harbors track down owners of federally documented boats at risk of becoming a problem, which he says tend to be old commercial fishing vessels.
We didn't know how many documented vessels were actually operating in the state, and it's that fleet that oftentimes would become the future derelict vessels, some of those as they just age out.
The bill also allows the state and municipalities to impose civil penalties, and individuals could take action against owners of derelict vessels in civil court. Currently, derelict vessel owners can only be charged criminally, but the law also imposes stiffer penalties for those found guilty. Holly Wells is Homer's city attorney and is a shareholder at Birch, Horton, Bittner, and Shiro in Anchorage. Wells helped the task force craft the bill's language, and she says the legislation not only lowers the legal bar, but it also clears the path for small communities and villages to give notice, impound, and scrap derelict boats. Portions of the bill would not go into effect right away. It tasked the State Department of Natural Resources with creating a derelict vessel prevention program, which would be funded by title fees. The bill would go into effect January 1st, 2019. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We could not put the show together without the help of reporters from around the state. This week, we had help from KBBI's Aaron Bolton in Homer, KDLG's Avery Lill in Dillingham, KNOM's Gabe Colombo in Nome, and Alaska Fish Radio's Lainey Welch in Kodiak. As always, a big thank you to the most important people in this process, and that is you, our listeners, as well as the fishermen around this great state. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Waugh.